This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Ian Boldsworth. FUBAR Radio.
It's the 10th of June! Welcome to the show. 4:30 p.m. today. We have Chico in the studio to chat about the 48-hour fitness party. Sounds utterly intolerable. Then at 5 p.m, Juno Dawson is in the studio to talk about her latest book, Meat Market, which is released on May the 30th. Released on May the 30th. That's what it says on my screen. Then at 5:30 p.m, Radu Isaac is in the studio to chat about his comedy show.
Returning guest.
Good excuse. So is Juno.
Yeah, Juno, two returning guests.
But Juno was on the phone.
That's very true. Well done, yeah, very true.
Sorry, Radu, your introduction got ruined by Nat interrupting. You're telling me all details about the last time I interviewed Radu.
Because he taught us to swear in Romanian, and then we called Connor, swore at him down the phone. And then,
Connor Wallace?
Yeah, yeah.
And we swore at him down
the
phone.
And then we thought that I might have to marry Radu because of the Brexit situation. Right. So I don't know if this is the wedding today. I don't know.
I don't remember any of this.
Okay.
I believe that
it happened.
I can understand us calling Connor and swearing at him. Yeah. Didn't you say Connor had unfollowed FUBAR?
He has, yeah. Oh, he's got several accounts. I'll have to check on the other one.
I wonder if he's unfollowed me as well.
I don't know. Let's have a look.
Scandal.
Ian Boldsworth on FUBAR Radio.
Howdy there, partners. It's time for the show.
Is it the hoedown today?
On FUBAR Radio. No, not at all.
Howdy.
Just wasn't concentrating when I started.
Okay. That
was the first thing I thought of just then. I'm a bit distracted because Race Finley, the comic book artist, has sent me his book.
It's nice.
Got it today.
Nice. Big package.
Thank you. And I did a drawing for a trading card for him to put with it.
It's nice.
And it is nice, but you know what? I wish I'd had like a bit more time. That's not his fault. I didn't give myself enough time. I did it in one evening.
Right.
And when I see it now, I'm like, oh, I'd change that. One of the eyes seems a bit out to me.
Okay, it looked fine.
I would change it myself.
It looked fine to me.
Well,
I thought it was me as well.
You're hardly in a position to. It's definitely not you, Nat.
Oh, okay.
I saw a little documentary the other day about. Oh God, I forgot his name. He's really well known.
Who is he?
He is a movie poster artist, Graham Humphreys.
Oh, Graham.
I chatted to him recently. I met him at a thing. Really nice bloke. His price structure is slightly out of whack with what I can afford for the Powerpuff movie.
Okay.
And John Beck's done a nice poster anyway. But it would have been nice to have a Graham Humphreys poster. He's very famous. Did Evil Dead and things like that.
Yeah,
and Freddy's Revenge and all them sort of things. And I saw a little documentary about him. It's very interesting because in that he said that one of the things he has on his desk when he's drawing is a mirror, little mirror. And what he uses that for is he looks at his drawing in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at something in the mirror, that's where you get a clear indication if there's a fault on it.
Oh, okay.
If you're drawing something, you just stop seeing. It's like an optical illusion. You stop seeing the fault. But if you hold a mirror to it, you would see it more clearly. Then I thought it was really interesting.
That is interesting.
But I didn't do that when I drew that trading card picture.
Oh,
maybe I should have done. I've got a mirror in my house as well. Should have used that.
Just the one.
I've got. Hang on, let me work it out. How many I've got? I've got one in the bathroom, two. Do you know what? I've got loads in the bathroom because I've got a wall of mirrors in my bathroom.
Oh, okay. The little tile mirrors, yeah.
So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. One, like, shaving mirror thing, 9.
That comes out the wall. The pool. I love that.
Yeah.
I put it
in myself.
They're good.
Yeah, you
can
pull it. I pull it right to my face.
Love it.
And there's one on the bathroom cabinet, so that's 10.
Just in the bathroom.
In that room.
Okay.
Then we go, let's take ourselves downstairs. There's a mirror at the front door.
It's 11 we're on now.
At the side, it's 11 that we're on. There's one in the living room, a circle mirror above the fireplace.
12.
That's 12 that we're on now. Mm-hmm. I don't have one in the bedroom.
Weird, why? Or maybe not weird.
Why would I want one in the bedroom? For what?
Well, I have one to you can do makeup.
So you,
make,
what, so
do
you
make
can stand there
and
squeeze
stuff.
Your tits in front of it.
That's what, that, yeah.
And go, ooh, Nat, you so sexy.
That's the tit mirror. But yeah. Then I have the makeup mirror too in there.
Tell you what, need for your tit mirror is them eight tiles what I've got. That's
more
what
than
know.
Eight. More okay. than eight.
So you've got your tit mirror.
Yeah, yeah. The makeup mirror, the hair drying mirror.
I mean, they're all the tit mirror in a way, aren't they?
The shoe mirror.
Yeah. Have you got a shoe mirror?
You've got to check a different length.
Have you genuinely got a shoe mirror?
Like in the shoe shop, you know, and they just have them on the floor. It. That would be great.
If you had one of them, like in a Clarks.
I would love to get
one. You just look at your feet before you leave the house.
No, I think that's quite good. I'd actually genuinely like one of those.
Do you choose your shoes?
What do you mean? Or do they choose me? What do you mean?
No, I mean, do you choose your shoes of a morning?
If I've got time.
I have two sets of shoes on the go at any given time, okay. Right? I have my trainers, my traditional white trainers, my mm-hmm. DCs. And I will have some boots yeah. on the go, right? And the trainers invariably win. So I'm normally like, oh, I can't be asked to put my boots on. I'm just going to put my trainers on. They're more yeah. comfy and stuff. That's what I have. So that's my choice to make of a morning.
I've got a lot, though.
Have you?
Like with Converse and then other shoes. Espadrilles Converse for summer. The boots.
Other shoes.
The boots.
Yeah.
Do you,
how do you choose it? What about me, Nat? Come on, tell me about you.
Maybe, like, what I'm wearing, the colour scheme.
Right, what's your colour scheme today? You've got a lot of blues going on.
Mm-hmm. And green.
Touches of green.
Blue and green. Well, it's quite a lot of green on the shirt.
Well, there's a lot of blue on the trousers
and
a lot of
blue
on the bust.
On the boob.
Yeah.
So my shoes are like that.
Right, So lots of green and blues, and her shoes are cream and multicoloured speckles
so,
on it.
Zhuzh it up a bit. To zhuzh it up. To be honest, today I was in a hurry and I knew I had to get my train in 4 minutes, so just I was just like, they were the ones near the door, is what I did.
Well, that's good.
What's your summer shoe attire like?
You'll have to say all of that again.
What's your summer shoe attire
What's
like?
What's my summer shoe attire like? I've just got my trainers on. That's
so
it.
The boots go into the cupboard for the winter?
They don't go in the cupboard, they're there. The thing about the boots, right, the boots will give me another inch.
That is true. Well, you can get a stacked trainer, Spice Girl style.
I could do.
Or...
But I wouldn't. I think it's too hot at the moment and I'm too tired to wear boots.
Okay.
That's how I feel.
Too tired to wear boots.
Yeah, I can't.
Boots.
Well, they're laced, but oh, you don't yeah. have to lace and they've got a zip up the side.
Oh, fine.
So really, but That's even lazy. Pulling that zip up is too much hassle. Wait, but
you've got to do a lace up on a trainer.
Don't undo them. Never undo them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Kick them off, put them back on again.
I see. Now, how would you feel about no lace, no, just an espadrille for summer? Just a slip-on shoe?
Invariably, Natalie, those are the sorts of shoe that are very flat, and I don't
they
like
are.
A flat shoe. Now, that's nothing to do at all with my height. It genuinely isn't. Mm-hmm. I don't really care. I know I said before about an extra inch. I don't care about what height I am. I'm uncomfortable, though, with my feet flat on the floor.
Ah, do you have flat feet?
No.
Because there are, I know some people that have that need something. It hurts their arch.
Their notch,
the foot. Yeah.
No, I don't have flat feet. But I feel when I go swimming, which I've not been for I think about a year now,
mm-hmm.
I've got some, again, DC flip flops I've got. And even just walking from the changing rooms to the pool in them is like, I don't like this.
Okay.
Don't feel nice.
So do you have to wear a slipper, a raised slipper in your house so
no,
you don't go flat?
I don't
flat?
Wear slippers.
You just go barefoot.
I invariably, this is a good start to the show.
It's good,
it's got us chat. It's a shame
yeah.
we're not doing a live show to get people to call in
we
and tell us about their shoes.
Yeah.
I don't wear slippers. I have some slippers, but I knacker them within a week.
Why?
I just
what
do.
Are you
I
doing?
Just crush them and knacker them and okay. they stink and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, they do get a bit smelly.
What I use instead of slippers, either barefoot, it's fine, my house is clean.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have an old pair of DCs that I might just slip on if I wanted to go and put a bin out.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's
you know
normal.
I mean?
You wouldn't
something
go barefoot
like
to the bin, would you?
Oh, I forgot to bring in the recycling box.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go down
mm-hmm.
to the road and get that.
Okay.
But I don't like to spend too long in trainers without socks on.
Oh, no, because they do stink too.
Which is why I use an old pair.
Right,
rather
okay.
than a new pair.
Well, then can I
There's
ask you...
There's methods to my madness.
How do you feel about people if they come to your house...
Don't like them.
Just generally, get out.
Don't like them
but
at all.
What kind of bothers me, and it's in summer more than anything, is if someone comes over, I do like the shoes off option in a house, but it's if I see bare feet everywhere and I'm like, oh, I don't like that.
So would you, if I visited your house, would you ask me to take my shoes off when I came in?
I wouldn't insist on it, no.
I didn't say insist, would you ask
no,
me
No, I
to?
Wouldn't. I probably wouldn't. I do, I would.
I'm uncomfortable with taking my shoes
no,
off in someone else's house.
I can get that, actually, because it just feels a bit, you're like, oh, I didn't know, maybe I've got a hole in my sock or something.
I'm not bothered about that. It just feels like, I'm not switching off like that.
Right, but
this isn't my house.
What if, some people do, what if they came to your house, sat on the sofa, bare feet everywhere, and then put their feet up on the sofa? Right. I'd have to throw them out.
Well, again, it's how many people do you think come to my house? It's
not that many.
It doesn't happen very often at all.
No.
And it's postman, really, and he's not going to come in and do it, is he?
Well, you don't know. Where's he now?
He is a bit over-familiar sometimes, my postman. Like, sometimes he is.
In what way?
Well, sometimes... I used to leave the door unlocked, and I don't anymore.
Of course. What decade are we in?
Well, I think that the door... Well, you've seen where I live. It's out
of
the way.
Yeah, but even so, that's where a lot of... I've seen enough horror films to know definitely lock a door in the country more than anywhere.
But they're not real now. But the thing is I now do lock the door... Because I live on my own now.
So I
do lock the door. I don't know why I thought previously I was safer.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't. But it just felt more comforting to have someone else there.
Yeah, of course.
In terms of like, oh yeah, leave the door, it's fine, be okay. Mm-hmm. Now I do lock the door. But if I've ordered something to be delivered, or he's delivering a parcel or whatever, the postman now, he seems to be, but he's not arsy because he does it in a passive aggressive way. He laughs when he says it. And he goes, oh, the door's locked.
Oh, right, okay.
Like that.
Like, yeah,
sorry about that, but your door's locked.
Oh, right.
And it's like...
What, did you just walk
in? I know.
No, I don't think a postman
no,
walking
in. No, he used to just
okay.
open the... There's a little hall. So he used to just open the... There's a little... What they call that thing on the front of my house?
Porch?
Porch. There's a little porch. So he used to leave stuff in there.
Okay.
And fine. Also, if I get up and remember, I will go and unlock the door anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
If only just so that I have a row with my postman. There we are. I've had ongoing issues with the recycling as well.
What was the issue?
Just still leaving stuff. What's that you wrote down?
No, I just wrote down something to remember later. Not a name that I'm not going to say.
Christabel. What was it about?
No, it's just something that just somewhere I went to recently, and I had a hell of a time in this local village.
Right.
Who was described to me as Darling Buds of May, but it was more like Village of the Damned.
Right.
I can't. Maybe that's.
And why, so why have you wrote that down?
Because just to remind me to say it.
All right,
to talk about it.
Shall I put a song on
there
you can talk about it?
Yeah, yeah, please.
All right.
Terrific.
I've not even looked at the playlist today.
Okay.
Let's have a little look what we've got. Has Chico not got any other song apart from It's Chico Time?
Why would you need anything else?
No, but has he, though?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Can we find a different one and play a different one? I think that'd be nice. Do you know what? I think if I was Chico, and again, I'm being presumptuous, but if I was Chico, I think I would be, like, really touched if I went and did an interview and they didn't play Chico Time.
All right, okay, well, we'll have a look.
So I think we should not play Chico Time.
Unless he insists on it or says, like, I really want you to play Chico.
I'll just say to him, you don't need to.
Just
you
get
don't...
to sing it.
No, he doesn't need to.
He wants to.
It was like 10 years ago,
it's
possibly
a big
longer.
Big hit.
Let him get on with his life. He's doing all his thingy
he's
now, isn't
famous,
he?
He's famous, isn't he?
I'm really struggling to pick a song here. I'll put this one on.
We'll be right back.
carry on the conversation we were just having. So we were talking about... Don't do that. Don't hit that symbol like that.
That was the sounds of Akadaka.
We were talking about various right-wing and left-wing commentators on mm-hmm. radios and things. And mm. I said to you that I thought that LBC didn't have any left-wing commentators apart from James O'Brien.
No, they do. They've got Eddie Mair and they've got Sheila Fogarty and they've got Clive Ball. So it is actually when you go through...
It is balanced up.
It is balanced, yeah.
I mean, they've no obligation to be balanced, have they not?
No, they don't have to be, apart from during an election period. Well, the presenter has to rein it in a little and can't say, for instance, vote for this person.
Right.
Not allowed to.
But is that not tacit, though, when someone's... Well, if someone's a standing candidate, like Farage was...
Well, then, if you're running, then you're not allowed to be on air during the election period.
Oh, so was he not?
Well, he wasn't running at that point, was he, when during the last elections? No.
And he's these elections just gone.
He's just come into the Brexit party, isn't he, to take over it or whatever. But I don't think he was on air then, no.
Oh, was he not? Okay. And Julia Hartley Brewer, you said, wasn't on...
She's on talk radio.
Is she doing the breakfast show?
She does do the breakfast show,
good
yeah.
Christ.
She does do the breakfast show.
That must be an awful way to wake up. Now, here's the thing. I'm not a condemner of Julia Hartley Brewer, okay. Believe it or not. I'm a condemner of many of her opinions and the way she conducts herself in terms of statements that she might make. Right. However, and this does matter to me as well, to mm-hmm. me personally, I worked with her and she was impeccably well-behaved and very welcoming.
Okay.
Like, you know, I didn't get any sense at all of her being nasty.
No.
Certainly not with me anyway.
Right.
And we were diametrically opposed in terms of what
Sky.
We believe.
That Sky was on Sky, yeah. Yeah.
So I wasn't well up at that point on what her politics were. All I knew was she was sometimes on LBC.
Yeah.
Doing cover, generally speaking, is what she
did,
used to do.
I believe. I think maybe she did a regular show for a bit. I'm not entirely sure about that.
Either way.
Yeah.
I didn't particularly like her on the radio. I remembered that. But when I got, it was my first time doing Sky, and she really showed me the ropes, and she really, you know, she was properly, she had a metaphorical arm around me, as mm-hmm. it were. Not that that counts for aught if you're a horrific racist or anything like that.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that is my experience of the person rather than the image.
Yeah, of judging somebody how you find them.
Is a bit more balanced.
I think it's also entirely possible and will happen throughout your life to have people that you meet that you get on with who don't agree with you politically or in other ways. Now, obviously, as you said...
Yeah, Connor, so why are you unfollowing Fubar?
Obviously, it's not Connor.
I've not called you out, Connor.
Well, I don't know that he has. He was one account. He's got several...
Connor, you've really upset everybody here.
It's ruined the show, Connor, to be honest. He won't even be listening anymore, no, will he? I don't know.
He's got a tiny image up, mate.
He has.
He's got to erase the past.
He's got to get rid of it. He won't be... Well, you're a bit too left now, aren't you?
Who, me?
Yeah, or even...
I'm nothing.
You're nothing. Oh, don't do yourself down like that. You're everyone's something.
I'm not anything. Everyone's. I think everyone's a cunt.
I will say, though, if it is someone with extreme racist, homophobic, any phobic views, then okay, then it's fine to go. Although even people who... views that I completely disagree with in terms of immigration or race, I've met and thought, and then suddenly you think, oh my God, no, actually I remember what they believe in because they're being quite nice and you feel like, I'm getting on with them now. Then you remember some of the things they've said and it sort of tricks you for a minute.
Well, here's the thing, right? Here's the thing with this. I would have said, in my youth, in certainly my early 20s and stuff, I would have said that somebody being Tory... Mm-hmm. would be a stumbling block for me in terms of that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't feel that I could even have any relationship with them because I would think that a fundamental within them was something that I abhorred, right? And by I'm saying being Tory in the loosest sense of the word. So somebody that subscribes to many of those views and is very out for themselves and all that sort of thing. Yeah. It's that idea, right? What I'd say is that then as I got a bit older, I thought, do you know what? I bet some of these people are really charming and really nice when you meet them.
Yeah.
And that wasn't true. Okay. So I worked with the Hamiltons, for example. Fucking...
Didn't like them, did you?
Like, no, I didn't.
Even Louis Theroux...
And it wasn't what I was bringing to it myself.
It was how they were behaving.
Yeah.
But Louis Theroux's documentaries, when he used to do it with different people, you could sort of see some qualities that he would be like, okay, even...
Could you really? Could you?
I was thinking, even with... Savile. You were like, when you watched it at the time, were like, oh, okay, it's a bit weird, but I can see it turns out.
I thought it was an AIDS programme, yeah.
But with the Hamiltons, I was watching it thinking, this is just quite uncomfortable,
kind
actually.
Of
even for Louis, he doesn't seem to be entirely comfortable with it either. And I feel like he probably didn't keep in contact with them.
Well, the feeling I got from it was that Neil Hamilton was thick. That's the feeling I got from
it. Did you?
Yeah, that he was just dumb. But he might, again, might be playing it that way. but I thought he was just dumb.
Yeah.
And I thought she was just fame hungry as well. That was the feeling I got.
But then she would be the one smarter because pushing him into the position.
But she seemed to be that. She seems to be the Lady Macbeth of the two.
Yeah.
Is how it came across.
Yeah, I think that's how it seems.
But there's a caveat to this, because pretty much every Labour politician I've met as well has also been a dick.
Right. Okay.
When I've met them
in
real life.
Have you met a lot?
Met some pretty high up ones.
I tell you who I met who I really liked.
Which I'll name him. I met John Prescott and I didn't like him at all. No, and I really thought I would.
Okay. Yeah, I would assume
so. Do you know what I mean?
That would be a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and him working
I
class.
Really didn't like him at all. I found him really, really phony. Again, these are all my own judgments of it. I'm not saying he is, but how I felt at the time when I was there.
Yeah.
That was my assessment of that situation. Okay. I thought, oh, he seems really disingenuous and really phony.
Could it be possible as well that you think you might meet someone on a bad day?
Well, absolutely.
Could be. Who else have you met that you haven't liked?
But, again, there's a caveat to that.
Oh, okay.
You can't have a bad day when you're doing a TV programme.
Well, if you are, you should cancel it, shouldn't you? You shouldn't go on TV.
That's not necessarily, you should cancel it. But if,
no,
but,
no.
But,
if you're a guest, I
but
mean.
you're then on. So you should be on.
Be able to switch it
so you
on,
should
yeah.
be able to. If you're having a bad day, rise above that. I can't do it. I won't be able to. I'll sulk. But that should be. If you're a politician, particularly, you should be able to glaze over that.
Okay.
Met Jeremy Corbyn last week.
Oh, and you sent me the photo of him. Yeah. How was he?
Met him by accident.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the full story of it. Mm-hmm. What happened. I was staying in London because I went to see The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. Which you enjoyed.
Thoroughly enjoyed.
Yep.
Really enjoyed it. Like, there's no point promoting it now. It's finished.
No, but Twilight Zone,
you missed
the play,
treat.
You should say.
It was
really
fantastic.
Good.
Really liked it. And then at the hotel, I'd noticed that there was a little park next to it. Well, I can say where it was now. So it was at Vauxhall.
Okay.
And there was a little park at the side there, which had a little cafe. Mm-hmm. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go there tomorrow and do my Patreon. I'm going to write my Patreon there tomorrow. Because I tried to do it on the train down and it was...
Yeah.
I was like, I'll go there, I'll get a coffee, I'll sit down, I'll just have a bit of time where I'm not rushed. I was going to meet John Bett later on. I had a meeting later on as well. And I was like, right, I'm going to go and do that. So I went there, all quiet, got myself a coffee, sat myself down, and then just filled. The whole place filled.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all people, Labour rosettes and stuff. I was like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
All the places. And Corbyn just walks in.
Right. Did everyone part the way for him? And he was high-fiving everybody.
Kind of. It was
kissing
kind of
babies
like that.
On the head.
But here's what the thing is, right? I spoke to him briefly because I said, is it okay for me to take a photo?
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to just start taking photos. I said, is it okay?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, that's fine to take a photo. Or he didn't even say it like that. I've given him manners there. He went, yes.
Okay.
Is what he did.
Oh, yeah.
So, took the photo. There was another politician there with him who I don't know what his name was, but I could show you a photo of him. Mm-hmm. And you might be able to say who he
okay.
is. And he had a rosette on that the Labour bit of it had fallen out of.
Oh.
So it was just blank. And they were about to do press photos. And I said, excuse me. I said, you might want to put another rosette on because if that photo's taken, someone will just fill that in for your online. And it'll say all manner of things.
Well, good thinking.
Right? And he went, no, absolutely. He went, they will. Thank you. And this lady went, no, thank you. That's a really good spot. And I went, it's all right. And afterwards he went, I presume you're the sort of person that would have done that for you to spot it. And I went, no, quite the opposite, mate.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But you know how Twitter works.
I know
so,
how it works.
Yeah.
So I chatted a bit more generally with them. And Corbyn was a bit, he was busy. But, he seemed a bit sort of like didn't want to be bothered with all that. And that's fine. And I was writing an article about autographs, quite by chance. Whoa!
Well, that was weird. That screen just moved.
Your computer just fell down.
Where's the ghost?
I was writing an article about autographs, about collecting
yes.
autographs, and how I have no shame about that, and how I find, you know, people go, oh, you get autographs. It's like, no, I think it's a really nice thing to have. And you know,
not a lot of people do these days, either,
I don't think.
Well, I do. So, yeah.
Just got Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse's book signed.
Very nice.
So I said to his campaign manager, whoever it was, and I said, listen, I've been writing this thing, this is what it is, and I showed her, and I said, I thought it might be quite nice, because what this article's now become about is how I can't write the article, because I'm being bothered and stuff, because it's, you know, everyone's around me.
Yeah.
So I thought it might be quite nice, at the end of this, for me to have Jeremy Corbyn's autograph, saying sorry for interrupting your article or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And she went, oh, I don't know if we'd be able to do that or not. I said, well, it's fine if you can't, but, you know, he was signing autographs with other people.
Yeah, he was, right.
And I went, you know, I just thought I'd ask anyway. She went, let me ask someone, I'm going to go and ask this other lady. But I can't promise anything. And then she had a chat to me about politics and stuff, and I said I was disengaged and blah, blah, blah. Then she came back and she went, no, as I thought, we can't do an autograph, unfortunately.
Why?
No idea.
He'll have a photo taken, but he won't sign something.
Well, I mean, giving it the benefit of the doubt, I presume it's something perhaps to do with how that can then be manipulated.
Okay.
So if I've got an autograph saying sorry for something from Jeremy Corbyn, then that can get screen grabbed and sorry, Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah,
do you know
sorry,
what I mean?
Sorry about Brexit,
you can do
Jeremy
all manner
Corbyn.
Of things with
yeah,
that,
yeah.
can't you? So
he was all right. hardcore?
Well, just like, no, I was surprised at how, what's the best way of saying this without being libelous or slanderous in some way?
Think it through.
No, I will do. Just give me some time.
Okay. Shall I say who I met in the whilst who I liked a
lot? In a minute. It's doing my story.
You're thinking.
I'll tell you again. So again, with the caveat of this is how I read it. This doesn't mean this is true. This is how I read it. Don't panic. I'm not going to say I thought you felt a bit like a paedophile. Don't worry about it. That's not what I'm going to say.
No.
Right. What I'm going to say is kind of robotic.
Oh, okay. That's a lot of politicians, though, I think.
Not sure that it is. I think politicians...
Theresa May, I definitely think is robotic in her style.
Fair enough. But I think there are politicians who also thrive on personality and thrive on character. And
right.
I think that's a big part of being a politician. Like Prescott, for example. So John Prescott sold himself to me on being like... Yeah, fuck him. You know, that sort of thing.
Well, wouldn't you not have said Blair was quite robotic?
But he wasn't like that when I met him. When I met him, I thought that he was more like... There was a bit more... He was more considered, I thought, and more...
Okay.
The image felt considered to me.
But I thought Blair had... I didn't know his personality. I thought he was very much robotic in style.
No, I think one of the things that championed Blair... Certainly one of the makings of Tony Blair in the initial period of his power was how he responded to Diana's death. How he responded to Diana's death was what galvanised him because he did come out, not like the royals had, with a very stoic statement.
Yeah,
he came out and just spoke quite warmly and passionately and, you know, that's how it came across. Whether that was, I mean, obviously that was all written down anyway, I presume.
Yeah.
But it seemed like he'd just done that off the top of his head. So I would say that his personality was key.
Yeah.
To, you know, because when you boil it down to what Blair actually was...
Yeah.
He was about as far away from socialism as you could get in reality.
Which is why I got in with Labour, isn't it? Because we weren't into that.
Well, there we go.
Sorry, Chico's parking finishes at 2, so he needs to leave by then, I've just been told.
Fucking obsessed with time,
I will say before we go to a song, is I met Tom Watson, really liked him. Really liked Tom Watson.
Oh, I thought you were going to say...
I always hoped he'd be in charge and not Corbyn.
Oh, I thought you meant Tom Lofty Watts.
No, I'd love it if he was, actually.
Tom Lofty Watts. He used to butt heads with him.
It's Chico time, let's go.
Was a cheeky little number that
cheeky.
Was finishing all quickly like that.
Talking
I wasn't expecting that. I literally just looked up and went, oh shit, 6 seconds.
Talking of cheeky
happened.
Though, it's now
No, it's Chico.
Chico. Cheeky Chico.
Cheeky Chico, that's it.
Do you want to go with... Is that what we're going with?
We're going
Cheeky Chico?
That's exactly it. Today, I'm Cheeky Chico.
As if Cheeky Chico,
talk into the mic.
Can we shut that door, please? As if Chico wasn't a good enough brand in itself, you've added Cheeky to it.
That's it.
I know two ladies who'll be very upset about that.
Oh.
Why?
I know two girls that will think that they've got the trademark on that.
Okay. Well...
What?
No, I was just turning his mic up a bit, that was all.
Okay, Nat's doing some technical stuff. How are you, man?
Do you know what? I feel alive. I'm grateful to just be breathing, to be honest.
That's a good start. Well, do you know, I didn't know about this. Nat just told me, like, earlier on, that you had a bit of a scrape with death.
Yes, 7 months ago, I had what you may call a near-death experience, not realising it was a stroke, thinking it was a spiritual
stroke.
Yeah, major stroke, like a 50 pence blood clot in the right hemisphere on my brain.
Okay.
Thought that it was a spiritual experience, and of course it wasn't, because when your left arm starts going numb and you start going, and everything starts to go, you should actually take, you should remember the fast advert, which is, you know, look at your face, is your arm going funny, you know, speech and time or tongue, you know, and all of those things were happening, but... I think my ignorance at the time saved me because I in my head I was going, strokes only happen to people who don't look after themselves or, you know, maybe slightly senior or not. I didn't think people that worked out were fitness fanatics with a six-pack at 47 will have it.
That's the weird thing, isn't it? Because I'm a little bit younger than you, but not much. But I'm like, I would be a dead cert for a stroke, surely.
Well, touch wood, that no. Don't want to say that and put it out there,
if it happens, it happens, but... But the, you know, I understand, but you know, I would certainly have had you down as like, no, he's super fit, that dude. He'll have a stroke when he's 67 or 70.
Whatever, you know, and you're probably not. But you see, again, this is the misconception of this. It could happen to literally anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
What we're talking about is prevention. For me, prevention is better than cure. That's probably why we're doing this whole fitness thing weekender at Pontins. But it's about highlighting that this could happen to anybody, but also... You can do certain stuff to help it because a great percentage is a lifestyle.
Okay. Yeah. So what would be... So it's called the 48-hour party, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
48hourparty.com. And what does that actually entail?
Well, it's kind of like... we're calling it Chico's Block Fit Party. And what I've done was we collaborated with Pontins, basically. And what we're doing is I'm inviting the whole fitness industry. And I'm not just talking about the industry from a physical point of view because there's, again, that misconception.
Yeah.
Everyone is buying to the outside, which is the physical, which is a six-pack and a J-Lo butt. Yeah. And what we're saying...
Not quite everyone. Can I just... I'm going to pull you up.
There is a six-pack there, just under a few dinners.
Yeah, more it's not... I'm a very muscly man. I've said this before. I'm a very muscly man, but it is very... buried, but I used to be super, like, not that's not true. I don't know why I was gonna even lie.
I was gonna be super fit.
I wasn't super, but I was physically super fit. I wasn't, I didn't look super fit, but I played sport.
I just say what you just said there? That is exactly the misconception that people think that you have to look fit to be fit, and that's actually not true. You know, I trained over 500 instructors to teach my BlockFit brand, and honest to God, some of my best fit instructors are actually. Mothers who've had a few kids who are a little bit on sort of the curvy side, may I say. And mate, listen, they give anybody a run for the money. And when you look for them, they are brilliant at what they do. They look fantastic. And again, they are like healthy on the outside. And that's the misconception is some people could look healthy on the outside but are fat on the inside and vice versa.
I'm both.
Yeah.
I'm fat inside and out. But there's a now what we've hit on there is a potential stumbling block for this.
Yeah,
I think, and it's something that I think needs combating on a social, not just a worldwide scale, really.
Yeah,
is that what you remove by saying you can be fit, but you wouldn't necessarily lose weight and all that sort of thing, is you remove the incentive. So the incentive to most people to get fit isn't because they're worried about having a stroke or a heart
attack.
That's right. It's because of how they want to look.
To look,
which is a tragic state of affairs, you know, in my opinion. I think that's absolutely horrible. So that requires a complete shift in perception for people to stop worrying about how they look and it, as long as they're fit.
But you see, this is exactly why we're bringing the fitness industry together. We've got the best of the best in the country, but we're not talking just about the physical aspect. We've got speakers, we've got motivational speakers. We are inviting cancer survivors, stroke survivors, and we've got a whole well-being aspect of listen, let's educate the mind and connect to the heart, and the rest will follow.
Have you got a kebab trailer? where people can get, if they wanted to get a kebab.
Oh yeah, they listen, we cater for everything, and what I believe is the middle road is the best. Being extreme at anything, being on one side of the same sort of line is no good. You've got to be somewhere in the middle. In other words, train, keep active, eat well, but never deny yourself anything.
Right.
Never ever deny yourself anything, because for me, when people say to me, oh, you know, if you're sitting down looking at something and do you eat a cake or do you eat this, I say yes I do. And if I feel that I'm going to have a little bit more, all I do is an extra 20 minutes on the bike or in the gym. So I kind of balance it out that way, but you got to live a little. But again, what I'm saying is, once the mind is working in its order, and it's not a living in a prison called the fear of what they think of me, then what tends to happen, we find that it's an open prison, and you've never really been in prison because you're already free here. Therefore, it lets every cell in your body say, guess what, I'm going to enjoy this. And as a byproduct, your body starts to see change anyway.
But was your initial fitness kick, so how long have you been like a ripped bloke? How long have you been, you know?
Well, I've done my, I was into fitness all my life. So from a kid, I actually wanted to be, you know, I was a, I wanted to be a footballer. Right. And then from there, I went into martial arts. And from there, I was competing, and I had some injuries, and I had some kind of I thought I'd go in and do some rehabilitation with weights, and I was genetically gifted, and all of a sudden I started seeing magic results, and boom, I thought, oh, vanity kicked in.
That was going to be my question. Was it driven by vanity in the first instance?
Oh, absolutely. I would honestly say anything to do with the physicality, especially when you're younger, is to do with a vanity. Vanity, right. Absolutely. What I call it is let vanity be your driving force. That's not a problem, as long as, you know, you don't become so egoistical to say, you know, let it become your driving force, not your destructive force.
But there is a worrying aspect, because it's a very thin line between that.
Of course.
Pardon the pun with that. But there's a very thin line of going, of then losing perception of what you actually even look like.
That's
and,
right.
You know, and losing perception of what's fit. And once you get addicted to losing weight, you then can't stop.
That's
and
right.
There comes a point where you have to stop.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, bodybuilding is a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, a normal person in the street would look at someone, male or female, and go, wow, I'd love to look like that. But that person...
Don't look at Nat when you say that.
But that,
thank you,
Chico.
Thank you.
No, well, you wouldn't.
He just said it to me.
But you see...
Thank you, Chico.
I'd love to look like that. But you see, what they don't understand is that very person who everyone wants to look like is actually a prisoner sometimes by looking,
in
going, I'm not big enough, I'm not cut enough, I'm not this enough.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do here is to go, hey... Middle the road is where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, with BlockFit, why I devised it in the way that I did, which is dance, combat, HIIT, yoga, meditation, all in one, four blocks.
Sleep.
Sleep.
Sleeping as well.
Yeah, because the
meditation.
Because the meditation part, actually, you know, sleeping. Sometimes I do testimonies and go, what's your favorite part? They go, that meditation bit, send me to sleep. And I'm like, yeah, you know. But you see, again, that was dealing with all the facets of the human physiology.
Mm.
All right. And what I love about it is the super fit can sit next to the beginner and not feel out of place, because we give modifications of different exercises that would never make you feel out of place. It just makes you feel like, oh, wow, I can do this. But hey, next time I can do what the intermediate is doing.
Yeah.
And next time I can do what you know, the super fit can do.
So how do we tally all this with the fact that, and again, I'm not being confrontational at all. I'm genuinely interested
in
this. How do we tally this? So the entire raison d'etre of the BlockFit thing is because of the experience that you had. Okay, that's where that's arrived out of that. Yet the irony of it is that you were super fit.
Yeah.
And you did have a stroke.
Yes, that's
do you know what I mean? So that's, it's a difficult thing to sort of go, hey, get fit and you'll be all right. It's like, well, you wouldn't. You know.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's almost like that. Someone on Twitter, you know, just wrote down and went, oh my, you know, obviously he was swearing, but it was like, oh my effing God.
If you want to swear, Chico, you swear.
Oh my.
I got children, I tell them what to say. But he was like, oh my effing God, you know, if super fit Chico, healthy living, and can have a stroke, what chances have I got with, you know, four packets of crisps and a pie in my hand or yeah. something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is actually, even though it's funny, it's like, wow. But you see, I'm the 0.0000%.
Of course. No, I mean, anybody that's taking solace in some, that's like people saying, well, my grand smoked 40 a day. She died at 90. It's like,
but that is like a really,
how many grands lived till they were 90 and were smoking 40 a day?
And you know, what I would say to that would be, you know, there are times when your time is up, and doesn't matter what you do and how fit or unfit you are, your time is up.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, clearly it wasn't Chico time.
Do you believe that? Do you believe 100%. Predestination.
Look, when your time is up, your time is up.
Yeah.
And when your time is up, no one can prevent it. And if it's not, no one can stop it.
Would you rather know? If you could find out, would you rather know? If someone could tell you the moment of your death, when it's going to be, would you want to know?
No, because
I think I would.
Because I tell you what, because life is a mystery, and the beautiful thing about life is not knowing. Because if you was to know what's going to happen tomorrow, it'd be boring. It's almost like, remember Groundhog Day, that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just want to slit your wrist because it might be exciting in the beginning, and it's like, oh my God, I know something that nobody else knows. Oh, look, I can see the mysteries. And there are certain people who can, you know, from a spiritual point of view, can know bits and pieces of certain, Akashic records or preserved tablets or whatever. But it would become boring because, what's the point? It's the mystery. It's that excitement of not knowing, and bang, it happens.
Right. So why? So then, I kind
why
of.
Why do you want
to know? No, that's an interesting point, though. Mm. Is that I understand that as a philosophy, it's a mystery and all that sort of thing. But yet, most of the human race spend all their time trying to work out what that mystery is.
Well, exactly.
And trying to work out what their purpose in life is. I know certainly for me, that's been something over the last sort of maybe 10 years or so that I've certainly gone, what are you? Work out what you are. What
Who
do you
are
do?
You? Who am I? Am I this ego? Am I this body? Am I the mind? Am I my thoughts? But actually, what we are really is, look, if we can look at most scriptures, say for instance, the great masters come with a book, and that book is really a book of history. Within that is a hidden message about this mystery.
Right.
And the mystery, actually, when you get to realize it, is you are the mystery.
Yeah.
You are like a divine mirror of this pure, loving, unconditional consciousness that is completely overlooked by the me, which is the ego, which really stands for easing God out. Or I call it energy going off, or just energy going on. Really, it's just all we are is, put us under a microscope, we're a vibrating energy field, but we take ourselves to be this person, but actually we are much more than that. And when the realization happens, it's like, whoa! And everything you've ever wanted in life, including the material, I want this, I want to be this, rich, fame, whatever it is, just falls by the wayside because it's not this.
What if we're much less than that?
Oh, no, no.
No, but what if? So that's the mystery,
okay,
though, isn't
if you're
it?
Less.
Oh, do you know what? I'm delighted with this interview.
Yeah.
I could never have predicted what I got this morning. I don't know who the guests
and
are.
And that's the mystery.
I could have never predicted this morning
that I would
be having a great philosophical and spiritual debate with Chico.
But that's the mystery. But this is what I'm saying, is if this conversation couldn't have taken place had there not been some kind of searching within you to go, what am I? Who am I? Hold on a minute. I've become this radio DJ, people know who I am,
famous one.
You know, all that. And then you get to that point which you perceived all happiness lived, and then you go, there's more. Hold on, there is something missing. And all it is we as human beings are separated from the beginning. You know that childlike wonder?
Yeah.
It doesn't know it's color, creed, sex, or gender. It just is. Mm. And then it gets indoctrinated by the parents, and you're black, you're white, Asian, Caucasian, atheist, believer, non-believer. And what happens is like we're a computer and a software. We just put in the software into this brain. Boom, file save, ego, file save. And then we develop a story called me as a person. And then you believe yourself to be that person. And what I'm suggesting here is you're not who you think you are, because the moment you go, hold on a minute, let me look at this. Oh, that is just a software, because if the hard drive gets deleted, the computer looks the same, or the iPhone looks the same, but the software is gone. And what we are is really nothing more than a library of indoctrinated belief systems through our past. And we become the index of that mind. So we act according to our fears and joys of the past. But what I'm saying to you right now about this mystery is all of that falls apart, which is the death of the ego, if you will, or what the masters would call enlightenment or liberation. Woof! It happens, and it's like, oh my God, the drop reunites with the ocean, which is really the oneness of the oil, is whatever name you want to call it. And it goes, oh my God, I was never at the drop. I've always been part of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we're being groomed by Chico.
I think I'm in, though. I think I'm willing to. How much do you need of my earnings? I'm willing
we
to
don't have to kill people no, often,
and,
do we?
And, by the way, and by the way, the real masters that will tell you this would not charge you anything for it because it's free. Because all there is one.
Where's that? So what would that be? So that's my conditions of belief are nothing. I don't believe in anything like that. Right? Okay. I don't believe in anything spiritual or anything like that. Where are they? Well, extrapolated from.
Okay, I'm my background. I'm from an Islamic background, yeah. But I always had a problem with my way is the right way. So I went out searching basically, okay. And Sufism was. I had a spiritual master for over 15 years, and that was the beginning of my teachings. But I also went, you know, to all the mystical schools, Zen Buddhism. Every belief system has the dogma aspect, which is like what I call the body, right? The do's and don'ts, and it's a credit-based system based on fear.
It's blackmail.
Yeah. Right. It's the fear of hell and the delights of heaven. So what's being suggested here really is each denomination has a mystical side, which is the saints or the enlightened people that have gone, hold on, there's more to it than this. Mm. And they find that mystery and they try to share it with people, but people don't want it because the people in charge, like the church or whatever, they build balls on it and they scare the hell out of people and they extrapolate money from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's being said here is, this is free. This is who you truly are. So this message is it pretty much in every mystical side of every belief system. Mm. So if you're a Buddhist, Zen Buddhism, Kabbalah, Judaism, Sufism in Judaism, and mystics or the Gnosis, who are the true followers of, say, the message of Jesus back then, were the Gnostics,
okay,
or the Christian mystics. It's very, very few of them about, but you know, there are people out there, and this is really about unconditional love. It's about who you truly are. You're not this ego, body, mind, and you have to understand you're just a wonderful actor playing a part in this celestial dance called life.
And but then you've taken that even further. This is something I've been struggling with recently.
Go on.
If you take it even further, there is an element of, because my belief at the moment as it stands, what I've sort of got it down to is I think everything's biological. That's what I think, including the idea of soul and the idea of, you know, all the things you bring into that.
Okay.
They're just all things that your body is biologically doing, which this is the heartbreaking part of this, literally heartbreaking, which would nullify love. Because it means that love isn't an actual thing. It's obviously not a tangible thing anyway. But it can feel like a tangible thing. But love can't be... If I'm right, then love can't be true. Because love itself is just a biological... It's no more mysterious than pain.
Well, if I may answer that, is yes, the brain is an unbelievable, sophisticated apparatus that makes this world work.
Yeah.
All right? What tends to happen is because you believe there is a me... As the story, you believe that you're the doer of everything. And what's being suggested here is the doing, life is already happening.
Yeah.
But, so for instance, I'm making a cup of tea, right? You think, oh, I've just picked that cup of tea. But what happens is your brain has already decided that, and the you, a few milliseconds after that, goes, oh, I picked the cup of tea. So you think you picked the cup of tea, but the cup of tea was already going to be picked up.
Okay.
That's what quantum physics physicians have just come to understand. And they went, all there is oneness. So when, like, time and space as we know it is illusory. And you go, well, hold on a minute. How can it possibly be illusory? And I go, okay, look, when they broke down time to its, like, minutest bit, which was about 22 with 100 zeros next to it, time disappeared and all there was energy. So you ask a theologian, say, well, how did the world come about? It goes, God, God will describe God. Always was, always is. Can't be created, can't be destroyed. You ask a quantum physicist, he says, energy. Describe energy. Always was, always is. Can't be created, can't be destroyed. And what I'm saying to you, this energy is absolute unconditional love, because that's why each and everything in this world knows love.
So with all that in mind... I've heard you.
Mm-hmm.
With all that in mind, why are you panicking about your parking running out?
because
I know your team checking out.
Do you know why? because this apparent me is very scared at getting an apparent ticket because I haven't got the apparent money to pay for it.
Just go there. Go there and say, you can't give me a ticket because time is illusion.
Exactly, exactly.
And can I just say something very, very quickly as well? And I hesitate to say
this. I can't believe this.
No, it's nice. This is nice.
I love, this is like, wow. Right. I can't believe you asked me this question.
Quick question. Yes, no answer. Do you celebrate Christmas?
I celebrate anything that brings people's happiness.
Okay. Nice. There's a reason for me asking that. It's a precursor. Because I have a friend who I work with called Barry, right? Who, and I can't remember the full story. And I've tried to call him earlier on and I've not been able to get in touch with him. But he sent you a text out of the blue one day wishing you a Merry Christmas, right?
Wow.
There was a reason for it. I can't remember what it was. It was a entertainment reason. He was trying to make contact with you, and the first one was say Merry Christmas, and then one of his friends said to him, no, he's Muslim, and then and then Barry just panicked. Yeah. I was like, he didn't know how to bring it back in. But I just wanted to explain a text that you may have got one Christmas out of the blue from Barry Dodds. That's what he was actually trying to do.
Well, your 48-hour fitness party is at Breen Sands in Somerset, September the 20th to 22nd. Tickets at 48hourparty.com/fitness. Andy Abraham's there as well.
Oh, my God.
Former guest on the show.
Oh, Andy.
And Jive Bunny. Andy was lovely.
Jive Bunny. Jive Bunny's not a person.
Well, it is now.
Well, it is now, yeah.
It's a cartoon.
No, Jive Bunny's
there. Literally, we've got over 40 presenters around the world. We've got over 75 classes. We've got five bands, and like I said, it is going to be a culmination of great minds, great hearts, and I'm calling it a Soul Weekend Heart Smiler.
I've no beef with that. As I say to you, I would consider myself 100% utterly atheist. I would consider myself.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is, though, I have no beef with anyone who's, for want of a better word, preaching a positive message that's not about divisiveness in any way. Yeah. So I've no beef with that, because there's no harm that can come of that until somebody gets hold of it and then starts going, oh, let's kill some people as well. But that's
the big problem with all of that is the me, which we think is real, grabs it and it thinks it knows this oneness, which is it thinks it knows the mystery. Yeah. And it goes, no, it's this way and it's this way. And guess what? There is not one way. It connects with the atheist, the agnostic, the Muslim, whatever it is, it's beyond the you. It is absolutely indescribable. And anyone that can actually describe it to you is no more than someone giving you a menu and going, wow, it delights my heart. But I say, eat the food and then talk to me.
Nice.
That's it.
Okay, honestly unpredictable. I've really enjoyed the chance here. Can I ask you another question? Have you ever been on a radio show where they've not played Chico Time when you've been on?
No.
Well, you have today. Because I have made a point. I made a point to say, no, I'm not playing Chico Time because everyone will do that.
Yeah, I would like you to play some of my new stuff.
Well, I don't know. Well, we've got some other stuff.
How new is DISCO?
Oh, no, don't.
Don't play that.
Well, that's what I've got that, or it's England Time, which is just Chico Time anyway. I'm playing it.
They made me do that. That's what killed any chance of me having a career.
Play the song.
Here's Chico's favourite song that he ever did. He thinks it's brilliant. Thanks so much, Chico.
Love you guys. Wow.
What? Sorry, what?
Nothing.
Sorry, just a minute of saying something. What
are you
saying?
No, I'm not saying anything.
No, you're saying. I'm having a little breather here now.
I'm trying to wonder what I believe.
I think we're in a cult.
Yeah, I think so. Well, or a religion.
It didn't sound like a particularly damaging one, but I don't suppose they do they, at the beginning?
That's how they reel you in, isn't it?
So that's how you think Chico's just groomed us properly into being in his cult.
I liked him a lot.
There's two things I'm worried about. One thing I'm worried about is that I am now in his gang.
I'm all right with that, actually.
The other thing I'm worried about is I'm now best friends with Chico, because we had a little chat as he was leaving.
Yeah, he liked it. Lots of hugs
and stuff, and saying how much he enjoyed it.
He said he wished he'd got longer parking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lesson. Do you know what? For all the philosophising that Chico just did, I think the main thing he's learnt is always overestimate your parking.
You should always do that, right?
Underestimate your parking, because who knows what adventures life shall throw your way.
And better to have a spare extra 10 minutes that you don't need than running out to get a ticket. Now, what he did do was, and I thought it was okay, was we talked to Ella about the bare feet situation.
Oh, right. Did he have bare feet?
Mm-hmm.
Did he really?
On the chair. And I thought, I looked down and I was like, oh, yeah, heavens to Betsy, what's going on?
So Chico's been rubbing his feet all over your upholstery.
Not actually on the chair, on the bottom wing. Right. The wing? The wheel. The wing of the chair. So I've seen feet on it.
Gaunt did demand a very posh chair. It's got wings on. I would have fucking loved it.
It wants to raise you up.
When John Gaunt was demanding a new chair, you should have bought him like one of them. One of the things that you see on the seafront. Like a little rocket that goes back and forward.
That would have been really nice.
And tell him that's all he's allowed.
That would have been really nice.
Oh, you should have just said, shut up and do your job. I liked him.
I liked him a lot.
I mean Chico.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I liked him a lot. Did you think you wouldn't?
I didn't think I wouldn't.
No, because I've met him a few times before and he's always been the nicest person ever.
Have you met him?
He came in years and years ago, and I was at another radio station to record some sort of podcast, and someone said, do you want to? I was quite new there, and they went, do you want to come and a podcast with Chico? And I was like, God, I've been waiting forever for someone to ask me that. But he was the nicest person ever.
He's very tactile with you. Not in a lecture way.
No, just hugging. He's kind of just like that, isn't he, with everyone, really. But
I felt like there was a connection with you two.
Do you?
That was one of the few times in my life now, and you'll thank me for this.
Yeah.
One of the few times in my life during that interview where I bit my tongue.
I actually bit my tongue. I knew that you did it. And it was when he said...
I'd like to look like you, when he said about how you look. And I bit my tongue from saying, if you put a blonde wig on, you would. Okay. And I bit my tongue.
Chico and I look nothing alike, okay?
You look a bit like Chico.
I don't look like Chico.
Well, how's that an insult?
How is it? Well, because I just don't look like Chico. It's not an insult.
Chico's a proper good looking...
He's a hunk, if you will.
And you're a bit of a hunk.
I'm a hunk.
A bit of a hunk.
Oh, thanks. Okay, that's nice.
When you do all your heavy weightlifting, lifting up buildings and buses.
I do, yeah, that's the thing. I just lift buildings up every day. So I'm actually incredibly fit.
Look, I'm happy to say Chico's friend of the show.
Of course he is now. He wants to come back. That's what he said, didn't he?
We should keep it quiet, by the way, but I'll whisper it now. When we have guests on, we do actually consider afterwards, are they a friend of the show or an enemy of the show?
Oh, okay. I think mostly friends we have.
We've got a few enemies, haven't we? That EastEnders bloke from the other week. He's an enemy of the show.
Former EastEnders bloke.
Former EastEnder.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name even. He's an enemy of the show now.
John Gaunt
is an enemy of the show.
Okay.
That interview that we had to pull that time.
That person is definitely
an enemy of the show.
Enemy of the station. We won't have them on the station at all.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
what
I've insisted.
Good.
No.
I insisted that as well first. So.
But I enforced it.
Yeah, but I said it. So you did. Because their name actually recently came up,
and Abby and I were like, "Oh hell no."
What, as a prospective interview?
Mm-hmm.
Should have put them on this one.
Should have put it on this show.
Should have said, well, we can offer you Ian's show. Do you want to do that one?
Yeah, they would have said.
He's a few things to say to you.
Yeah.
Wasn't my fault.
I can't be bothered to chop out 40 minutes worth of audio
the
again.
The person themselves was in the wrong.
I know. But you don't have many enemies. The guy from Chernobyl that came in.
Enemy.
No, friend of the show.
Oh, no, the guy playing him's a friend, but the actual character's an enemy.
Well, yeah. Have you watched that series? Very good.
My brother told me a spoiler about it, but he said you find out in the first minute.
What do you mean? That there was a nuclear explosion? That's the whole point of the show.
But that lad who came in is the person whose fault it is?
Ish, but he's not a baddie.
No, that's what I mean.
He's not a baddie.
But I said to Gareth, my brother, I went, oh, thanks a lot for spoiling it. He went, honestly, it's the first thing you find out in the episode.
Which made me think that he perhaps... I don't want to spoil it, but I'd be surprised if I see him in the second series.
Oh, right.
I mean, that was... If you cause it...
Hefty spoiler.
If it's you causing the massive nuclear explosion...
But we established within the interview that there wouldn't be a second series, that it was a self-contained five-episode thing.
It's very good. I'm in the third episode, and I'm enjoying
it. Good, I'm pleased for you.
God's sake.
What?
I'm an enemy of the show now.
I've always considered you an enemy of the show. I've always considered you an insidious part of this organisation.
Thank you. Thank you. Was it you, that person on Twitter?
What? What's that?
You know, that person on Twitter that was going a bit ham.
What was that?
Queefy or whatever they were called.
Oh, my Twitter years troll. Ago.
Yeah, but it seems very shades of what they... Like, I knew it was
you. Is that
you.
What they said?
In sort of, well, they just basically really, called me a cunt several times, yeah, to be honest.
What happened is somebody on Twitter... This was years ago.
It was about 4 years
somebody
ago
on Twitter was slagging Nat off an awful lot on the show. And me as well. Yeah, and well, then they tried to get Ed into it by pretending to be nice to Ed, and then they were horrible to Ed as well.
Yeah.
It was,
and others,
it was classic
people.
Trolling. Well, you see, the thing is now, I disengaged from it.
No, well, I just blocked,
at the start.
I muted them. No, I didn't block them. I muted them, so
you
I couldn't
kept sending
it.
Me them for a while
kept
until
sending
I told
them to
you
me,
not
and then
to
I
send
said,
them to me.
Okay, maybe don't tell me what they're saying, because if I don't see it, they'll just go away.
Yeah.
And then they turn out to be like a Trump supporter. So
anyway, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. But I would say that, wouldn't I? I would say that.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Let's have a quick song, and then we're back with Gina Dawson.
Yes.
Some people say I look like me dad.
This is Matt's favourite song.
It is.
And that's favourite song, One More Time.
I like Bewitched a lot.
I know you do.
Love
it. That goes as far as say you love them.
I do love them.
Absolutely love them. We're joined now by Gina Dawson to talk about her latest book, Meat Market.
Hello.
Hello there. How are you getting on?
I also love Bewitched. I prefer blame it on the weatherman, though, if I was to pick one myself.
You might have one.
Have a look, see if we've got it. Okay. Now, talk to Gina for a bit while I look at this.
Gina, we're calling Gina friend of the show because we've decided, I think you heard, that we either have friends or enemies of the show. You've been on before and you're a returning guest, so
yes,
you are clearly
a best
friend of the show.
Although I've been in the studio, I keep moving away from the mic. It's not helpful, is it?
Stop doing that.
I've been in to visit Hannah Witten and Callum McSwiggan back in the day.
Yes.
I'm trying to fix the mic,
which doesn't want to stay upright today.
Well, I noticed when Chico was on that the mic has come loose.
Yeah, I need to fix that. It's also
mic.
The might of Chico's power has made the mic come loose.
Well, it's at the moment we've got Juno showing how to do it. That's it.
Yes.
Are we happy with that?
I'm just not going to move or breathe.
Right, Nat, give me some volume there, please.
You're up full now.
Cool.
Right, still sounds quiet.
It's okay. I can move another mic round if we need to.
All right, then we'll do that. So meat market. Well, actually, let's go back a little bit. So I'd interviewed you on the phone.
Yes,
is what had happened. Then I met you and didn't make the connection.
No, I can't remember which happened first. I don't know whether the interview came first or
it was the interview.
I think it was the interview first.
Because, yeah, we met at the Mind Media Awards,
yeah.
I think, like, two years ago.
Yeah.
There's been a whole other one since as
Has
well.
There? Was it good?
It was
I was
great.
Invited. I was invited and couldn't go because I was filming.
Oh. Yeah, it was lovely. Who was there this year? It all blends into one. I don't think we had a royal this year.
Okay.
Obviously, yours was a bit whizzier.
Yeah, that was true.
Just yeah. He came to see you, yeah.
They pulled out. They were like, Ian's not going.
He came because I was on there. Yeah. And then I said, no, you're going to have to go before my award's presented. And he said, okay.
Then he went.
Bye.
But I kicked Stephen Fry instead. I enjoyed that night greatly. I was quite conflicted that evening.
Mm.
And I think, actually, because we did an interview afterwards.
Yes.
I doubt it was ever used, because I don't think I was very good in it. Because I was a little bit discombobulated. And I think I was trying to explain to you in the interview, I'd kind of disengaged from mental health work at that point and then won this award, which was like, oh, shit, no, I'm not doing that now. I'm not doing that. And it was...
So it was the podcast.
Yeah, the mental podcast.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Which I was delighted. I really was delighted to win the award. It did mean a lot. Genuinely did at the time. So I'm not being disingenuous about that. But I had decided at that point that I didn't want to discuss that sort of thing as part of my public profile anymore.
Yeah.
I'd thought about it a lot and I tried to work it out and I was like, I don't think I'm doing good now. I don't think this is either good for me or I think there's now an explosion of it that might be damaging.
Yeah.
Potentially is how I was feeling. So it was quite a conflict for me that evening. But it was very positive and quite inspiring, I thought.
I mean, I love it as an award, and I mean, Mind works so hard. I think I'm about to be on the cover of their magazine, as it happens.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they do great stuff. But I think you're right. I think there is a danger in making mental health too central and defining to your personality.
Yeah.
It can become, hello, my name is Juna, and I'm anxious.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, and it shouldn't, you know, I spend my life trying to get away from anxiety.
Course.
So I don't kind of particularly want it to define me too much.
Yeah. Well, I worry about the fetishization of it is what I worry about.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to feel party to that movement of contributing to that, even though I knew that wasn't my intention with it. You know, I didn't like the idea of somebody thinking, well, have I got to be like a bit bonkers as well? Is that because that everyone is at the moment? So have I got to as well? Which... then, you know, everything just gets out. It's a tsunami of stuff then, isn't it?
Yeah.
It all gets out of control. So that was my consideration of it. And we spoke to, I can't remember the dude who came in, who was doing a new mental health podcast. And we
had quite a Matt long... Johnson had a new podcast.
That's right, we had quite a long discussion about that, didn't we?
Yes.
On that one. But first and foremost, is this first and foremost, your A1 job is writing?
Yeah. I suppose it's funny because I'm a big fan of, do you know Emma Gannon, the podcaster, and she always talks about being multi-hyphen.
Okay.
So I suppose I am author hyphen screenwriter hyphen, what else do I do? Podcaster, all sorts of things.
Portfolio career.
Exactly.
Yeah. I learned that about a year ago and I've used it ever since.
I like it.
Portfolio career, yeah. Yeah.
Lots of strings to my bow, yeah. But author is by far and away the day job and that's what makes me happiest.
What's the, I'm going to come on to your book, but what is the drive behind that with being multi-hyphened? Why?
To survive, really.
Is it financial?
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah. So when initially, I got my first book deal in 2011 and I gave up my day job. I used to be a teacher. And as it turns out, I thought I'd got a great big book deal, but in real life, it didn't translate to being that. And so very quickly, I realised that journalism was a really good way to kind of top up my income. And my non-fiction writing is really what has kept me going.
Okay. So how much of what you actually do now would you, if you could strike it off, if money wasn't, question, if money wasn't an issue, is there other elements of your career now, you'd have to say what they are, but are there elements of your career now that you go, I don't want to, that you're working towards not having to do that anymore?
No, I don't think there is.
No,
I think
that's a healthy
now,
place, isn't it?
Because I'm really looking, my last book did really, really well and has opened up lots of doors.
Okay.
And so at the moment, and I haven't been able to say this ever before, I'm just doing projects that I really want to do.
Good.
I nearly said that I was passionate about, but you should never say that you're passionate about anything other than sex.
For why? Really? Do you think that?
I just think, I mean, I'm really passionate about fruit. Really? Like what?
Would you never, like, make a creative work and go, that deserves a wank? that chapter I've just written deserves a wank.
No, I'm mostly treating myself with cake, if I'm honest. So it was slightly different. And you see my boyfriend's literally looking through a window now. So.
I'm so prolific, I'm up to about 10 a day. I'm
like, 10 chapters.
That was an amazing, amazing sentence.
You've done a good chapter, right? Have a little break. In fact, actually, Hannah used to talk on our show about, you know, some people go for a cigarette break. If I've done something good, she'll go for a wank break.
Oh, really? Is that
right? That's actually not an unusual, though. She probably didn't say wank, masturbation break. That's actually not that uncommon that you're saying that.
I couldn't make the link between feeling creatively sated and horny.
Why not treat yourself?
The two things wouldn't cross over to me.
Oh, okay.
No. I don't think. No. Sorry. Oh,
well. So, no, yes, I'm, quite happily doing just things that I'm enjoying at the moment, which is really cool.
I've got a feeling, you know, because I right? And I've got a feeling, I mean, this apart, but I've got a feeling that if you just decide to do that anyway... Like, even if financial, if you stop thinking about money, even if you just decide, I am just going to do the things I want to do, I feel like that it would follow anyway.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm always saying, it's a piece of advice I've always, always given, is don't get too hung up on these all or nothing kind of mentalities. And I've heard people say, oh, you know, I don't want to, you know, if I was going to be a writer, I'd want to give up my day job, which is a lovely notion.
Right.
But not everybody can afford to do that. And so when I'm in schools talking to young people, I always say, my dad used to get a trade, but you don't necessarily have to get a trade. But, you know, if you want to be a singer, sing. If you want to be an artist, paint or sculpt. Just if it's not making you any money, you will find that time in your life to do it. And I think, you know, if something was to go catastrophically wrong and my writing wasn't making me any more money, you know, I'd have to get a different job, but I would absolutely stay writing.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't let that stop me for a second.
No, and that's it. But I honestly feel like it just naturally follows. I honestly feel like if you've got to be good at it as well. Let's make no bones about it. But if that is your natural calling, if such a thing exists, then I think it's that classic thing of going, don't sit and wait for it. Do it. Do the work. Don't wait for a commission. Have the work ready in case you then get a commission. Go, I've done it. Mm. There it is.
Patrick Nis always says, you can read joy on the page.
Yeah.
And I really buy into that. And I know because my last book, Clean, was the most fun I'd had in years.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it was Clean is by far and away my bestseller now.
Yeah.
And I think that was because... You know, it's not always a fun and easy read, but I think you could tell that I was having an absolute blast with that character.
Yeah.
So I think now, and again, I'm very fortunate to be in the position where I wouldn't work on a novel if I wasn't having as much fun as I was having with Clean.
Ace, okay. That was the last... Didn't we speak about that last time? Mm-hmm.
I think it was.
Well, Meat Market's your latest offering. Yeah. It's already out.
Mm-hmm.
On the shelves as we speak. I've not read the press release.
Do you want me to tell you about
Please.
It? Okay.
I should say he never reads a press release for anyone. But so that he could just have a chat.
I'd rather read it from Juno.
Exactly, well, right? Yeah. You can describe it better than we can off a page.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just tell me what you wrote in this.
And it's better than them pretending a lot when you go on certain
Love
things.
Love the
book. I nearly named some names and I enjoyed it.
Oh, no,
and sometimes they only talk about what's on the back of the book or what's in the dedication. So I really enjoyed the book. I see you've dedicated it to your grandma. Like, you haven't read the book, you've read the dedication.
Not only have I not read the book, I've not even been given it.
Well, we have been sent it, but somebody from here took it home to read it. And forgot to bring it back in today. So
how's that?
Well, it's not helpful. I don't. Yeah, it's fine.
And by the way, out of all the promo things that we do on the station, books are the thing I'm most likely
to read. I know. We have had a blanket ban now from Julia is in charge. No one's taking books home from here apart from presenters. So that's been ruined.
I do. I read them. I read Karen McManus's
one. We'll bring it back and we'll give it to you when it comes back in. Sorry, Juno.
If you made a film, I wouldn't have watched it. But I probably would have started the book.
Disappeared from
it. If somebody's stolen it, they must have enjoyed it.
It's not theirs to keep.
Doesn't help us here now, though, does it?
No.
In this moment.
Because you'd be reading it chapter one. You'd be reading it live on air, would you?
Mate. Oh,
okay, right, you've finished it.
So I nearly read my own press release.
You mustn't. Take it away. Take it away from Gina.
I'm curious to see what's on it. So it's the story of a girl from a council estate in southwest London.
Okay.
She is called Yana, and one day she's at Thorpe Park when she is unexpectedly scouted by a modelling agency. And her life changes very, very quickly. But just as she reaches the pinnacle of her fame and fortune, she is assaulted by a very powerful person in the fashion industry. And the rest of the book is about her deciding whether or not to speak up about
it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a one sentence. That was good.
Thank you. One take wonder. Thank
Very
you.
Impressive. Now, you said that this was something when you were in the process of creating this, that it was something you were passionate and you corrected yourself. But you know what I mean? It was that feeling. So how do you... That's a horrible story, ultimately.
And this one was much thornier to write than Clean. And I nearly gave up.
Really?
Yeah, because it's a very strange thing to create a character knowing that you're going to put her through an ordeal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was an ordeal that I've been through, that all my friends have been through. And, you know, and the assault happens around 100 pages in. So that was 100 pages where I was like, oh, this is going to get worse and it's going to get horrible. And so I stopped. And up until that point, it had been very, very loosely based on the things I'd been seeing in the media during the Bill Cosby trial.
Yeah.
And I said to my agent, I said, you know, I'm not enjoying this. This is a really grisly subject matter. And I was like, can we do something else? And I like pitched this strange kind of like retelling of The Wicker Man.
Okay.
And my agent was like, and then just to
I'll do that then. Yeah. If that's gone, I'll do it.
Well,
I love that one.
We've had a sort of strange retelling in the Nicolas Cage film, and that didn't work, did it?
It really didn't.
Yeah, didn't work at all.
Mine
did
would
it?
Be funny.
It okay. was all. Good. It was all.
Like that was funny. Yeah.
Like an allegory for carbonism. It was. Yeah. It was. What was I thinking?
Right.
But just as we were having these conversations, the Weinstein scandal broke.
Okay.
And I realised that my book was just one part of a much, much bigger conversation that was kind of happening globally, and that sort of gave me the impetus to actually sit down and sort of get on with it. And I'm really glad that I did, because actually the second half of the book, where Yana sort of decides whether or not to speak up, I'm sure you can probably work out what happens, but that felt, you know, like it was powerful and triumphant, and I really enjoyed the second half of the book.
Okay.
There's a lot of solidarity and sisterhood in there. So
when you say that when it was a struggle for you to write it, what was it doing? What was it actually doing to you to... Because I find that really interesting, the process that people go through when they're creating something. Because it's not, again, I'm not intentionally bringing it back to me, but when the podcast that I did, that we, the award thing and all that, that was a really difficult thing for me to do. And even by saying that, you feel like you're kind of patting yourself on the back a bit. I'm not saying that to boast. I'm like going, no, it was fucking horrible. Like, it started with the best intentions. It went somewhere I didn't anticipate me having to go emotionally with it.
Yeah.
Speaking to people that I was very close to as well about all that stuff. And then me also having to sit down and edit it together and listen to it over and over and over again. It was fucking horrible. So I'm interested in what, how you then persevere through that, and how you, because I don't know how I did. Is the reason I ask is I don't know what it was that pushed me over the hurdle of that to actually finish making it.
I mean, it was a bit like pulling teeth, and
I binged the second series. Like
I gave up
on it. Yeah, yeah. It was like, I can't do that. I can't go through this again.
Yeah,
I felt very differently about the whole thing at that point. Anyway,
I think there was what I sort of made myself do, and there was definitely. So I remember, I really clearly remember the day that I wrote the assault scene. I did it in one day in a coffee shop, and just kind of almost wrote it very clinically, kind of, and that chapter is actually a slightly different tonally to the rest of the book, because what I wasn't going to do, because I felt it would dishonour the character, is I wasn't going to kind of like fade to black.
Got you.
You know, I felt, you know, as uncomfortable as it is, you know, I felt this is something that we kind of had to go through with the character, kind of, and also deliberately I put her in a situation. I don't even want to say it's a grey area or that it's ambiguous, because clearly she's assaulted, but it's a situation that I think a lot of young women find themselves in, where you kind of come away from it and you're just like, did that just happen? Like, am I imagining that? And was that okay? And then later on her friend actually says, was that illegal? And they kind of, as a pair of teenage girls, they kind of have to sit there and kind of pull apart whether a crime has been committed. And so I kind of got through it and very much sort of ploughed through. And then once I had a full manuscript and I could see the full picture and Yana's story is kind of, it reaches its conclusion, I was fine to go back and then edit it and go back to that chapter and kind of make it more sort of descriptive and more, more sense. It just made a lot more sense once I'd edited it. And that's because I knew that Yana was going to get the resolution that she gets in the book. So it didn't feel quite as, not quite as sort of what's the word I'm looking for, the phrase I'm looking for, not so near the nerve. It wasn't...
Well, it's that, it sounds dreadfully wanky, but it's that idea of something that you've created and somebody you've given birth to, essentially.
Well, you love them.
You make sure they're all right at the end.
Yeah.
Or whatever all right is within the story.
Yeah, so. And I think, I mean, people are constantly saying to me, you know, what do you think defines YA fiction? What makes this a young adult novel? And I wouldn't have ever left a main character without any sense of hope.
Okay.
Because I think in real life, there is always a chance of redemption. And, you know, this book... It's bleak in places, but in my mind, there was never any chance that Jana wasn't going to get some sort of resolution.
Is your writing always responsive to zeitgeist?
No.
No, zeitgeist is totally the wrong word for this, this sort of thing, so I apologise for that. For what's going on...
Culturally.
Culturally. Zeitgeist is totally wrong. That's totally the wrong word. Is that something that feeds into your work?
Yeah, and I think you're right to sort of differentiate between sort of zeitgeist or anything that's too trendy.
Yeah.
Because if anything, I would steer away from a trend. And obviously with young adult in the wake of Twilight and then Hunger Games, we did see some trends. So I would always steer clear of trends. But again, I always say this to younger writers, that authors, we are plugged into the same internet that you are. You know, we have huge concerns about the world as it stands. You know, we have concerns about Trump, we have concerns about global warming, we have concerns about the far right. How can those things not influence something that you're spending 7 or 8 hours a day on? So, I mean...
Well, they can not directly... they can influence in terms of where your mind's at the time and where how you're feeling about things. But they don't... I mean, in the case of Meat Market, it's very much a... Not Meat Market, is it? Yeah, it's Meat Market.
Yeah.
Sorry, apologies.
Is,
In the case of that, it's blatantly that.
Yeah.
You know, it is about that. That's what it's about.
Right, yeah.
So, I don't know. I always worry about... the idea of overload for the creator. You know, so if it's something that you do and that's how you work, you respond to stuff. I'm reading Ben Elton's book at the moment, okay, Identity Crisis, which I absolutely love. And the reason I love it is because it's made a lot of my insecurities about feeling like I don't necessarily agree with all of this. You know, with all of it, with the way that social media works and the way that people and pronouns and all that sort of stuff, I'm like, I'm not sure I can get on board totally with this, but I think my heart's in the right place. But I feel like no matter what I say, I'll be shot down for it. Well, like then when I said zeitgeist, I fucking panicked. No, do you know what I mean? I don't want to feel that, because I think I would hope that it would be obvious what I mean, and then if I go, no, that's the wrong word, you know, that's fine. But for some people, that would be a career ender.
No, it would.
It would. No, it's been proven recently that an apology doesn't
like
make
John
it
Ronson
all right.
Style, yeah.
So reading Ben Elton's book has been like, okay, right, okay, this is making a bit more sense of it now, and there is a frustration, and there is a feeling of being overwhelmed by it, and it's a great story, and I really like it, and I think some people will hate it. I do, but I personally have really enjoyed it. But when I've been reading it, I've also been thinking, fuck me, this sounds exhausting as a process to write this book.
Yeah.
You know, about what the creator would have gone through to come up with that actual work, because he's, and always has been, very responsive to what's happening.
Yeah,
you know, within
culturally. He did a Big Brother book once, didn't he? Yeah.
He did, yeah.
I mean, I think for me, it's a novel in particular is my space to make sense of the world that I'm living in. And, you know, I can't make sense of it all. It's too big and it's too scary and there's too much going on. But in that little world, the world that you've created, you're very in control of it.
Of course,
It's the safe parameters to try and deal with something like this. And obviously the Cosby trial went on, then Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, lots of other very high profile cases. And I suppose Meat Market is me working it out. But I also think as well, so I was very interested in fashion, and fashion is like the prism of this story. But really what it's about women and women having a voice. And I think really that's what it boils down to. And the fact that they happen to be models kind of adds a bit of spice or a bit of flavour. But really, you know, we could have told this same story in a high school or in a college or in an office.
Yeah.
And really it's about that choice that Jana has to make, where she has all these people around her saying, don't say anything, you'll make it worse. And she decides to speak out.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
Can you imagine if she didn't, and that's just the end of the book?
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? Because like, you know when you say about you feel for your characters and you've created them and all that sort of thing, and that we spoke about that duty of care to your fictional creation based on real, you know, real things. But there is that also temptation when you're writing that to go, I'm going to make a turn left.
Well,
she's
going
to go left. She's not even going to be in that situation. She's not even going to be there when that assault takes place. Because, you know, you can protect them.
You can.
But
and the
no
other
bother.
Thing, the other thing as well is that you know, and I've said this before in other interviews as well, that the difference between me and Yana is that when I was in that situation, I did nothing. Because actually I just sort of thought, well, do you know what? You've survived. You're fine. What are you going to do? You know, tell the police, but really it's probably not going to help. They'll be, oh, I'll get back to you when we solved all the murders, kind of. And so Yana, in a weird way, I got to resolve my issues through that character.
And do you regret that? Do you regret that decision, or do you think that was the correct decision for you?
I think in my instance, and again, was one of those very strange kind of grey areas, I don't think a crime had taken place.
Right, okay.
So in that case, I don't think it was a matter for the police, but very much like Yana and Sabadu in Meat Market, I had to talk to my friends and be like, when that happens, when a man climbs into your bed without permission, is that a crime?
Mm.
Like bed invasion?
Yeah.
You know, he was meant to be on the surfer bed. Like, is bed invasion a crime? And, you know, Hannah Witten, when I interviewed her for the Gender Games, she told me the exact same thing. And so, you know, and this happened to me about 6 months after I'd interviewed Hannah about the Gender Games. So I was just like, you know, what do you do? You know, call the police and say, a man has climbed into my bed.
Yeah. I remember once, years and years ago, and thinking it was weird at the time, and it's only now retrospectively that I've put it into some sort of... I've made some sort of sense of it. Many, many years ago, a female comedian, and that's relevant to the story, stayed at my house. I was promoting a gig, and she stayed at my house, and she stayed in my bed. And I had some work to do, so I was working on the computer, which was in my bedroom. It was only a little small little flat. I was working, and I was like, is this going to be all right? She went, yeah, it's fine, I'll just fall asleep. And I did all my work and stuff, finished off, went and sat on the sofa, right? And the next morning, she couldn't have been more... shocked and surprised that I'd not done anything. And I was like, what?
Well, the bar is low.
Well, that's
I was like, what, really?
I think there is always a moment when either you're staying at someone's house or they're at
that's
yours.
That's not, I'm not virtue signaling there, by the way. I'm not saying, well done, me.
It's said like, oh, I'm not going to try anything or do anything. There is always a moment of relief when actually they don't do anything, because it's so often that it can happen where you think, and you just feel them getting into bed with you and you think, oh, fuck, what am I going to do? Like, is this going
to
turn horrible?
I said to you, no, that's a different thing. I said to you,
it's
it was cold.
I didn't
want anything.
It's not you.
Clearly,
no,
didn't
you know
want
what
anything.
I mean? Like, and you have that moment of like fear where you freeze and you think, what do I do? How do I play this? Do I try and laugh it off? Do I say, get the fuck out? What do I do? How is this going to turn? And you're right, actually, if you go to the police and say, well, what did they do? Did they hit you? Did they do anything? They got into bed with you. Then it's maybe not going to be taken that seriously.
Yeah.
And so it just puts you off saying anything, doesn't it?
She still talks about it now, that girl, whenever I see her.
She brings it up because she's
now
holding you to a high bar by saying, like, I can't believe. So which all that means is other people that she'd have been having the same situation have tried something with her. And by even getting into bed, if you're saying, okay, and it can be established where, like, two people can share a bed completely consensually, that's all fine. It's if you're saying, I'm on the sofa, but suddenly I'm climbing into bed, you think, why? Why are you doing this? What's happening?
I did just punch. Having promised I wasn't going to move the microphone.
You would have got away with that if you hadn't said nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it seems to be a bit endemic, which is just this constant. And I think this goes back to, you know, the importance of sex education in schools, which is this very old school dance, you know, that boys and girls have been taught for generations, which is, you know, women must always say no or they will be slut shamed. Therefore, men must always push.
Yeah.
When actually what we should be teaching at school, which is this is what consent is, and everybody is entitled to clearly state what their expectations of an evening are.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is boys and girls want to do, you should be able to verbalise it free of shame, free of guilt. And then that way men would know that you know, we're not being coy.
No.
We just don't want to have sex with you.
And
that's what that means.
I want to make that quite clear at the beginning, that I'm not just because I'm coming back, I'm going to change my mind because we happen to be here.
Putting you on the sofa bed is not a veiled invite to my bed. It just means you're on the sofa bed.
It was my house. She didn't put me on the sofa. I chose to go on the sofa.
Right, okay.
If I'd have wanted to, I could have gone in that room, just pushed her out of the bed and said, this is my bed.
I could have given her the sofa.
Go and sleep. You're going to sit on the sofa.
Or on a
tea towel. Yeah.
In a shoebox.
So there's another reason why I'm brilliant. Hey, look, Gina, it's been lovely seeing you again. And best of luck with Meat Market.
Yeah,
it's out now. In, how do I say that, publisher?
Quercus.
Published by Quercus. Meat Market, Gina Dawson, thanks ever so much indeed for coming
in.
And this is especially for you.
Wait. I can hear weather. Gina hasn't got headphones on.
Wait for it.
Put the mics down.
This is a long intro, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which this will send me to sleep, so listen to this when I go to bed at night.
Okay.
And then we start.
It's just one more day. No one said there would be rain again. Won't blame it on myself. Yeah, I'll blame it on the weatherman. Get away for a while. Here I am, out on my own again. Won't blame it on myself. Yeah, I'll blame it on the weatherman. Standing on the shore, calling out your name. I was here before. I could see your face. Only clouds will see.
Bewitched and blame it on the weatherman.
Lovely.
Don't like it.
It's a beautiful song.
I can't say that I agree with Gina's tastes there.
I do.
I don't like either of them, either of those songs.
Oh, I thought Bewitched. You meant either one. There's four in Bewitched, not two of them.
I don't know. There's only two of them I don't like, so you have to decide yourself which ones I don't like. We're joined now because we're running out of time.
No,
it's
as
getting
always,
stupid late. Radu Isaac's back. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
It's all right, mate. How are you getting on?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm enjoying the summer.
You're enjoying the summer?
Enjoying the summer,
it is June the 10th, midsummer.
It is June the 10th, indeed. Hey, do you know that today was the day that Les Dawson died, June the 10th, and Rick Mayall died on the 9th
yes.
of June.
Yeah.
He died yesterday. That's the anniversary of both their deaths. Mm. Horrible deaths, both of them. There's my tribute.
Okay.
So Why are you enjoying the summer?
I don't know. I just I don't like winters anymore.
Okay. It's a weird question, that. Even as I said it, I thought, what a weird question to ask someone.
What do you want to say? Why are you
enjoying it?
Yeah. You know why I kind of put my finger on it a couple of days ago? There's no mountains in the UK, so there's no upside of winter.
There's
a few mountains.
There's the Lake District and places like
Ben
that.
Ben Nevis, no?
Big old hills.
Yeah. There's no skiing. It's just like cold and... I don't know.
I'm sorry.
And it's too far away.
I think we couldn't provide you skiing.
What? You want some mountains in London to go skiing on?
Like, Bucharest has mountains 2 hours away from
this
it.
This is why I'm anti-immigration. Because they come over here demanding skiing.
In the capital city, a mountain to go skiing on.
He comes over here, probably on our benefits and stuff, and he comes over here and says, I want to go skiing in London.
Honest, tell me about like upside of winter here. There's no upside of winter.
Nice pubs and with fires in them. So you can go and sit
there.
Yeah,
I've got an open fire at my house.
Lovely.
Okay.
When it gets cold, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I can have a fire in my living room and still be like, I'm still freezing.
We do have central heating here as well.
Yeah, we've got all that.
That's all like nice radiators.
I would still say I enjoyed summer drinking more.
Oh, of course.
Stop showing off about the UK now.
Yeah.
I think you'll find.
You know what? We got in the summer, we got air conditioning as well.
We've got central heating over here.
Yeah.
Now, last time you were here, I'd forgot about this, but that reminded me. There were two things that were going to happen. One was we were actually getting to a point where you nearly married Nat.
Might have to leave the country, and then we thought we may have to get married.
Because of Brexit.
Yeah, but then you never followed up on it at all.
I thought you'd be okay, right? I thought if you were in peril, you'd come to me, get down on one knee and say, please marry me, Brexit's about to happen.
I thought you were just using it as an excuse to actually get married to me.
I didn't want to come to
picking
your...
Picking up where they left off.
Well, you said your country was very cheap, didn't you? So it's very cheap to live where you're from. So I was like, so I thought that's great, it works both ways. But
that's called negging, that what she just did there.
Cheaper than here.
She just essentially peripherally slagged you off to make you love her more.
Look, we love Romania.
Your country's rubbish. Come over here and give us a kiss.
Cheap isn't bad. Cheap is good.
Cheap is good, yeah.
Cheap is good. Value for money. But you know, Brexit hasn't quite happened yet, but you're still here and you seem fine. So it's all good. Have you got married?
Yeah, no, I haven't gotten married yet. I'm still waiting to see who's going to get the leadership of the Tory party, and then I'll look into it.
What are you going
to
marry then?
Why? What does it matter?
I think that matters a lot on what's...
what's about to happen, yeah.
Yeah, but then I don't know. So I kind of...
What's your feelings on it? Is there still an insecurity about that?
No, not at all. I honestly feel like British people are more insecure about it because I don't have that much of a stake in it.
Right.
It's still not 100% my country, so it's...
Mm.
Yeah. What was the other thing that happened?
The swearing. We phoned up at Connor.
Yeah, you taught us.
There's something pizza. I remember that.
Yeah, pizza.
Pizza, which was what?
Vagina.
Vagina.
But the rude word, and yeah.
Yeah, it means cunt.
Okay, pizda.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that bad of a connotation as
what is that word?
It's to do with intent. And when I say it, I mean that.
Is there a word for the other word, the ruder word, C word?
I don't think there is.
They're
a
polite nation.
But there is a very rude word you can call women. But yeah.
What is it?
I think the rudest would be cow.
Cow?
In Romania,
cow.
You call me that all the time. Oh, I'm going to get on really well in Romania.
Does it mean cow, as in the
animal?
Yeah,
it means cow. Yeah, yeah.
And that's
the translation
rudest
of cow.
What is that? Is that pizda?
Pizda is just the vagina. It's the word for the vagina.
What's cow?
Cow is just the cow.
Cow.
So vaca is the
cow. Translates.
Yeah, no, vaca. Vaca is the cow.
Vaca.
Yeah, not you, vaca.
Vaca. Stupid vaca.
Doesn't feel aggressive enough.
No, I like it.
Cow.
It's a very polite.
What are you doing with your job?
So I'm doing the comedy, which is kind of working out fine. I've started doing like some a lot of European stuff and around Britain, and I'm doing my first Edinburgh show.
Yes.
And it sort of feels like it feels like I'm progressing just because I'm doing it. I don't know.
Yeah. Are you in good shape with it? Are you happy where it's at? Is it written? Have you got the lot done?
It's sort of there. Yeah, I have all the jokes. I don't really have the structures. I have like a bunch of previews coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have like an hour and 20 minutes, and then I'll just cut it down to an hour in August, but I'm not in a hurry to decide.
Well, it's better to cut down than have to write up. You know, that's better. It definitely is. But they both bring their own stresses. You know, they both... I remember coming in at over 2 hours on an Edinburgh show once and being like, I don't know what to cut. I don't know how to do this. It meant I had a tour show ready.
Okay.
But for the actual Fringe itself, I had to really condense it. That was equally stressful from my experience of actually having to write up to the hour. But if you're at an hour and 20, that's healthy. That's a healthy...
My plan is to get it down to like an hour and 10, and then every day decide what 10 minutes I don't feel like doing.
Well, but yeah, that's good. That's nice. Yeah. If you can do that, if you're able to separate that in your head and you're able to work that structure out on the hoof, essentially.
Yes.
Like Nat knows about hoofs because she's a vodka.
Vodka off.
That'd be a good thing to do. And so have you never done the Fringe before?
I haven't done the full hour, the full... Okay.
That's right, you did a package show though, right?
I did package shows, like a work in progress.
We should say it's called Good Excuses for Sociopaths.
So yeah, you just kill the interview stone dead then?
Well, I think that's...
No,
Don't like the title? You're regretting the title.
But he probably would have said it himself at some point.
Well, I just thought I'd mention it in because you're talking about a show. We don't know what the show's called. We don't know what the show's about.
I think the best thing to do is keep talking about the title because that's how people are going to remember it.
Good excuses for a sociopath.
Is your show about something? Does it have a theme? Is it an actual theme?
Sort of like all my bits kind of fit underneath the theme. But yeah, the theme of the show is I like to find good excuses for bad behavior.
Okay, nice. So, that's good.
Yeah. I don't like to change who I am. I just kind of find an excuse for why I am like that.
Yeah.
What sort of bad behavior?
I'm going to say stealing is one of them.
What, just steal?
Just like stuff from shops.
Do you?
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
They come over here. They want to do skiing in the capital and they steal from all our shops.
Yeah, that's not good.
What have you stolen this week?
I don't really steal that much.
Don't say what you stole or the shop.
What you'll see here, right? Yeah. Nat has the weirdest overreaction to this.
It's not an overreaction if you're confessing to a crime.
But it doesn't, we're not Ofcom, it doesn't matter.
You're completely incorrect. We're not Ofcom, but we are adhered to the UK law. They could come for the station.
They wouldn't. I promise you they would.
That's why you have to cut stuff out. Okay. Well, we don't allow that on air as this station.
It's an odd thing that you get that worried about it.
It's not worried. Well, it's also worried because I don't know why I'd want to confess to a crime of any magnitude.
What happened? It's not confession if it's part of a comedy show.
Fictitious as part of your comedy show.
What happens is I stole a key ring years ago. Years and years ago. By the way, beyond what would be prosecutable now anyway, right?
So yeah, statute of limitations.
Either way, I couldn't get done for it now. It was long enough ago for it to happen. And it was minor enough a crime that it was never going to end up in court.
Okay.
But whenever I bring it up,
because I don't know why you'd want to say it. Like, oh, shoplifting's
big and
clever.
But other people are noticing you're doing this.
I just think it's a weird thing that you'd want to talk about ever. And to say, like, I've been nicking stuff. I don't care if people have been picking up on it.
But it's not gloating about it.
I just think it's a weird thing to talk about.
It's better to address it than to actually keep doing it until it becomes a problem. Yeah. It's like any other addiction. You sort of just talk about it and you kind of keep it under control.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's still... I do steal once in a while little stuff.
What if you stole... What's the most recent thing you stole?
A bottle of wine, but, like, in France.
Another country. That's fine. If it's in another country as well.
It's fine. Okay.
Different rules.
And then I killed the shopkeeper.
Yeah.
In France, sir.
In France.
What's the biggest thing you've stolen? What's the biggest crime you've committed?
I think that was a bit of a drunk driving, but that's it, kind of.
A bit of drunk driving.
So I think the bottle of wine was the more expensive thing.
Because I think I'm not impressed by drunk driving. It's a terrible thing to do, Randy. Don't do that.
You shout about me stealing a hero's keyring.
I was thinking, like, okay, we're no more mountains we're building for you now.
Have you genuinely done drunk driving?
Yeah, but in Romania 10 years ago, it was very much part of the culture.
Right, okay.
What's it like there now, just so I know? No,
you don't really get away with it anymore.
No, good. It was the same thing here, and I think it still is the same thing here.
And like, I gig in small villages, and everybody's drunk, and then they drive home.
Yeah, that's true. That is certainly true. And I know where I live, I see people that must be drunk. when they're driving.
Yeah,
you know,
because they're in pubs that are far away from.
And it's not. There isn't a high police presence at all. I've never seen a speed camera ever. And I wish there was, but I've never seen one.
I think the biggest thing is they don't have night tubes everywhere in the world. That's the biggest the biggest reason why drunk driving accidents happen.
But my counter to that would be, well, then just fucking stay at home. Don't
get a drink in at home.
You know, don't put yourself in a situation where you have to get back from somewhere.
Well, yeah, but people aren't going to stay at home.
Well,
we can't have it both ways.
Well, then they deserve to go to jail.
Get a taxi, drink out. Drinking out, or just stay in and get leathered inside your house.
I agree with that. I'm appalled by your crimes.
Yeah. No. So,
you have to give people mountains and night tubes. Otherwise,
That's blaming someone else for your own for your own bad behaviour. That's blaming. That's saying, well, why is there not a thing ready to take me home? So, well, there isn't.
We got Uber. I don't know if you get Uber where you live. Actually, maybe you haven't, but you can have.
Mate, I can't get taxis.
Right, I was
going to
say you can pre-book a taxi in the country. So I'm going to be picked up here.
Extra £20 where I am.
Oh, is it
just
really?
To book it? Yeah.
Well, also the tube thing doesn't really work because we only really have tubes in big cities. So where you live, the nearest tube to you would be how many miles away?
It's in London.
Tube station, yeah. So I was thinking, like, it's quite a long way to go. Although I can get on a night tube only as far as Heathrow.
But then also, like, little villages don't really have that many pedestrians, so it's not as dangerous to drink and drive.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, no, it is.
It's just dangerous to the person doing it.
Dark roads.
Other motorists. It's dangerous to other motorists.
Yeah.
It's dangerous to anybody who's living in a house nearby because they could end up ploughing through someone's living room.
Well, they're very well badly lit, the roads. So if you are walking...
They are very well badly lit.
Well, badly lit. No, but I've also had, and actually do know someone who did hit somebody on a country lane, and it's kind of... Because they did, and I was appalled by it, but because they, thank God the person didn't die, but obviously they weren't in full control. There's no like lights on a lot of the country roads, right? Yeah. And they just did hit somebody.
If there is a road that is used by civilization, there is always a risk, no matter what time of day it is, that civilization will be on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it wouldn't just be you on that road.
Exactly.
That is true, but. The risk is way lower than any sort of street in London.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Doesn't matter. The risk of dying from an ecstasy tablet is very low, but it can happen. Ergo, they should be illegal.
They are.
No, I'm saying. Just because it's a low risk doesn't mean.
But that doesn't mean people shouldn't do ecstasy.
People can do what they want.
Do what you like. Yeah, but know the risks when you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't apply that to drunk driving because drunk driving impacts on other people as well.
Yeah,
that's taking an ecstasy tablet is just your own life in your hands.
It's not it's like selling ecstasy if you're drinking driving.
Totally different thing.
Yeah, that is.
I'm glad we've come to that consensus finally. We're at a debate.
Well, Romania sounds lawless. Jesus Christ, what's going on there?
Can you carry a gun in Romania? Is that all right?
I don't think you need a permit. You need a permit. Okay.
But how easy is it to get a permit? Just go down to the market stall and get one.
I don't think so. No, you kind of have to. I think there's an association. I think if your dad has a permit, then it's very easy for you to get a permit.
What about a sword?
I think that's what they're fairly popular in Romania. Like all the gangs, they do have the swords.
That's
the sword.
Yeah. Sometimes they have like a sword fight, and it's all the culture of like you know the Japanese culture of the swords.
Yeah.
So they just kind of nick that culture and feel like they're.
So it's samurai inspired without having the respect of the actual samurai culture.
Yeah.
So what you're portraying from Romania is people walking around with samurai swords, driving, and then climbing up mountains all the time.
Yeah. But
it's good and bad.
Going for a ski.
in big cities.
It's not the same person. We have a layered society as well. So we have the middle class going skiing. Yeah.
Maybe someone could invent a sword that doubles up as skis. So like a really wide sword. You can have it for all your gang stuff. You can take it out for that.
Yeah, and then
if you fancy going for a ski afterwards, just pop it on. You'd have to have two though, really, wouldn't you?
You definitely need on both feet.
You could uni ski.
I think you need like four because you have like the pointy part of the sword. You need like two of them to make a ski.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's true. It's a lot of swords that you're going to take to go. I don't think this idea is going to work.
We're making this hard for ourselves, aren't we? I'm not sure that we should enter the apprentice Romania.
No, I don't think it's going to work.
Don't think I've got a good idea.
They're not going to put money in.
Are you excited about Edinburgh? Are you dreading it?
No, I honestly am excited. It's so nice to have something to look forward to. So yeah, I'm
in life generally.
You can't go skiing, by the way, I think, in Edinburgh either. Is there skiing in Edinburgh?
Yes, there is.
Oh, there is. Well, that's nice.
I looked into it. It's not amazing,
but it's better than nothing.
I think you honestly can find better skiing in Portugal than Edinburgh.
No, there's a proper ski slope in Edinburgh.
He wants a mountain.
It was the first one I ever went on.
You want a mountain?
You can
though,
see
don't
it
you?
As you're driving out of the city. You can see it quite clearly up a mountain.
It's a small one. It takes you like 3 minutes to go down.
Relatively, yeah. But I saved someone's life there once.
Okay.
When I was in scouts.
I'm going to say that he was not that much in danger.
He really was. It was a little kid was tumbling, and I zoomed down and caught him as he was tumbling, and then I became part of the fall.
Okay.
And I protected him. I was about like 10 or 11.
Okay.
And I did it, and everyone hailed me a hero that day. I mean, if I saw a video of it now, if one existed, I'd probably be like, oh, it's not how I remember it.
Yeah.
But at the time, it did feel like I was properly saving a child from certain death.
That's okay. Nice. That's nice,
yeah,
of you.
That was
really
on the Edinburgh cool. ski slope.
So you are allowed one drink driving accident now.
I wasn't drunk.
Oh no! But
10. I hope you were not when you were on a ski slope at 10.
But because you saved the person's life, now you're the.
Oh, I've got karma points.
Yeah, you have karma points.
I simply wouldn't have a drink and drive. Like I just simply wouldn't do it. It's not in my.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near my thought process. That I just wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't do it as well.
You've admitted to it.
Yeah, you've said it.
I have
it.
Done
yeah,
it because that was part of the culture.
No, that doesn't make it all right.
Well,
is it not? Just because it's part of the culture. You know the difference between right and wrong. And it seems, Radu, if we're going to have anything in closing towards your Edinburgh show promotion, that you don't know the difference between right and wrong. Well, and you should say that on your press release. And it doesn't say on the press release, and I'm very cross about that.
Well, I think
this is the show, basically. I don't know the difference between right and wrong.
Okay.
Fine. Well, then in that case,
you promoted it very, very well.
Well, Good Excuses for Sociopaths is at... Oh, sorry, from the 1st to the 12th, and then the 14th, you get a couple of days off, to the 25th of August... £5 for tickets. Go to Just the Tonic.
Or pay what you want.
Oh, we'll pay.
Something there as well.
Oh, we'll pay what you want. Okay.
Just the Tonic. And a bunch of previews in London or Liverpool or Ludlow Fringe or New Yorkshire Fringe. So whatever you are.
Okay.
I have previews.
But they can find you.
Yeah. I have like a website and everything.
What's your website?
RaduIsaac.com.
Yeah.
Perfect. Everything's on there.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming back, man.
Yes, thank you.
Honestly, thanks for having me.
Absolute
and,
pleasure.
Next time we're going to talk about true things.
About what things?
True
oh,
things.
Just
don't try and retrospect something. Thanks to Chico as well. Thanks to Gina Doss for coming in. We shall see you again next week. Ciao.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.